Hey, what's going on, Champagne Sharks? How's everyone doing? This is T. You can find me on Twitter at Ricky Rawls, RickyRawls. And we have with us Mike.
Hey, everybody. It's Mike. You can find me on Twitter at BlackException1.
Okay. I don't know if this is free or premium. We'll work it out later. But regardless, go to patreon.com/champagnesharks to get access to premium episodes. You get 2 episodes a week instead of 1. And you also get access to all the back episodes that are in the premium episode library, including a lot of our great guests. And it's, at this point, over 50 episodes. And if you can't do that for whatever reason, or you're already doing that and want something else you can do, you can always go to iTunes, if you haven't already, and rate and review the show. Rating is fine, but rating and reviewing is, from what I understand, something that helps people discover the show. So, yeah, definitely do that. Also, if you have any questions or concerns or feedback, you can always write us at champagnesharks@gmail.com. Yeah, what's going on with you, man?
Same old same, man. You know, just another day in paradise.
You know what's interesting? With the last episode, with one of the last episodes we released, not the last episode we recorded, because we have a couple in the tank, but the one of the last ones we released, we were talking about how you guys started wondering if I was maybe like secretly white or something based on a reflection, and that I showed you guys a picture, and that was the first picture you saw of me. And to give people context so that people wouldn't just be sitting there like trying to visualize, like, what are these guys talking about? I made that picture that I sent you guys from the Bay Area, the picture for the episode. And I got the same response that I always get whenever I post a picture, where they keep saying, wow, I keep getting surprised that you're not like a fat ass. That's the reply I always get. I don't know what a fat voice sounds like, but apparently I seem to have it.
Oh, that's weird.
I don't know if it's the voice or maybe like the stuff I talk about, but yeah, for some reason everybody's always like shocked that. And fat ass is not my term. Like, that's actually a term that was in the comments. Like, before anybody gets on me, I wasn't using that term. That was a literal quote. And like, there've been threads on Twitter about it, or like on Reddit. Like, I don't know if people just wanted me to be fat, or there's something about my voice that just has a resonance to it, but I just find it fascinating. I don't know what, if anybody can explain this to me,
Yeah, I'd definitely love to hear that explanation too.
Yeah, yeah, I would love to hear the explanation, and then, you know, I'll read the best explanations on the air at some point, but yeah.
Yeah, if one person said it, it's one thing, but if you keep hearing it, it's like, okay,
but you know,
what am I doing? What am I saying that makes you guys think?
I don't know, it's something I've only heard, in relation to podcasting. Like, you know, it's not like I've heard it based on like phone conversations or other stuff. Not to say like they don't think it as well. Maybe they do. But, you know, maybe podcasting gets you a type of anonymous feedback that, you know, you don't normally get. So maybe, you know, my whole life I've been giving off like fat guy vibes on the phone. And it took podcasting for me to discover it, you know. I mean, nothing wrong with that. It's just I'm just curious, you know. I'm just, yeah.
Like, I would like to know too.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like I'm asking because I want to like change anything. I just find it fascinating that unrelated people have all said like the same thing. And what's interesting, one guy said, I keep forgetting that you're not a fat ass. So what he was saying is, and again, that was his words. What he seemed to be saying is that he discovered it and then my voice made him forget again.
He
had to see it.
Found out you weren't. Then listening to you, he went right back to his previous assumption that you were.
Yeah, yeah. My voice somehow made him forget like the actual evidence that was before his eyes go back. So yeah, yeah. That's
you're very hypnotic.
Yeah, something about that. It's a weight hypnosis somehow. I don't know. You still haven't seen Sorry to Bother You, right?
I still have not.
Okay.
And I receiving threats on Twitter from Champagne Shark fans to make sure we watch it, so I'm gonna get right on that.
Yeah, I did a show in person with Michael Brooks to talk about it because I saw it with him. Okay. So he lives nearby me, so we just came by, and I wanted to like loop you guys in, but mm-hmm. I knew you guys didn't see it yet.
Has he published it already?
It's gonna be on our network. So it'll just be like a episode that I'll squeeze in whenever.
Oh, okay.
But I still want to cover it with you guys. I'm waiting to hear when you guys see it. It's an interesting movie. I want to see you guys' thoughts on it. You know, it's interesting because it's similar to Get Out but different than Get Out. I'm not sure which one I would say is better. I think I would still give the edge to Get Out.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but it's
I really liked Get Out. So
me too. I like Get Out too. But I feel like Get Out, when you watch it, better understanding of what you saw. Whereas Sorry to Bother You is a little more surreal. So I had to spend more time thinking about, okay, what did I just see? And I'm still not totally sure.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely have to check that out now.
One of the things that we want to talk about. Oh, yeah. Let me know what you think. I mean, some people I know, like, straight up didn't like it. So, you know, there's no guarantee. You might. I know some people who like Get Out who actually didn't like Sorry to Bother You. They thought it was, like, kind of heavy-handed and stuff. But my personal thought is I think it's heavy-handedness on the surface kind of still disguises some subtleties underneath. I think some people just think the heavy-handed parts are all there are to it, but I think there are some parts that are heavy-handed on purpose but still have like some nuance underneath exterior heavy-handedness. But I wanted to talk about something that you were telling me about, but I'm not that well versed on it, so you can actually brief me at the same time that you brief listeners. But something about some black guy who got shot at a gas station, right, in South Carolina?
No, it was Florida. Clearwater, Florida.
Oh, Clearwater, Florida. Oh, I'm actually looking. Wow, isn't that sad? I did a search for a black man shot in a gas station by a cop, and there were actually like multiple links to the point that I pulled up the wrong one.
Well, okay, so now with this situation in Clearwater, it wasn't a cop. It was just some random guy who took it upon him. I guess he felt like he was the deputy.
Oh, wow.
What happened was, brother, his name was Marquise McLaughlin. He and his girlfriend and their child pulled up to a gas station in Clearwater, and she parked in the handicapped spot. And he gets out and goes into the store, and this fucking asshole, Michael Draca. He approaches the car. He looks all around the car for, like, supposedly the handicap sticker, you know, seeing if they have a sticker on the car, and they don't. And then he starts yelling at her about being in the parking spot, you know. And this goes on for a while Marquise is in the store. And, you know, it's obvious. There's no sound to it. There's a video, but there's no sound to it. But you could, obviously, there's a pretty big disturbance because everybody that's pulling up, everybody's looking over at the car. And,
I have a question. Do you know if she was allowed to be in that spot? Not that it matters, but I just
I don't know. I don't know. I doubt it. I don't know. I'm not asking that
justifies it in any way. It was just something that I was curious about.
Yeah. Oh, but there's an interesting thing about that too. But and yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec. But you know, once he comes out, he sees the guys, you know, yelling at her through her window, and as he's approaching, she starts to get out, and he steps towards her, and that's when Marquise pushes the guy away, and the guy falls and hits the ground, and he, you know, pulls out a gun. Then, you know, Marquise backs up, and like everybody out there just like backed up, and he shot him in the chest.
So that's crazy, because he actually was backing up when he oh my God.
And the thing about, and the this Florida is the part is of the crazy. Story that was really terrible is because immediately, like, you've never seen this, immediately the sheriff was like, well, hey, he was standing his ground. That's like self-defense.
Oh my God. Does happen, because that happened with Trayvon Martin. Like, what a lot of people don't remember about how the case originally went down is they just let him go immediately. The only reason they even...
Well, yeah, they let him go, but like the initial detectives wanted to press charges on him.
Oh, that part I didn't know. I just knew that he got let go with no charges at first.
Yeah.
And then the social media outcry kind of shamed him into wasting taxpayer money and going through the motions before acquitting him. You know, they're kind of like, okay, well, it looks like we can't.
It looks like this is going to go down that same line way. Because I guess what happens is at that point it's referred to the state's attorney's office, who decides whether or not, and she's probably going to be pressured I say she. I don't know if it's a she. It was a she in Trayvon's case.
So they're basically faced with two choices at that point. Yeah. The choices are either to not charge or to charge and acquit. Because you know, charging convict is never an option. So it's like
pretty much.
Do we let him off cheap or do we let him off after wasting the taxpayers' money? You know, like. How soon do we get him back out on the street? Because you know
this one. See, but this one we got video evidence, and you know
we've had video evidence before.
But like, I'm just talking about in Florida with the Stand Your Ground law. You know, George Zimmerman's bullshit ass story. We just had his word, and that's it. Yeah. You know, on this one we got several witnesses, and we got a camera, and this guy has a history of doing shit like this.
So that means we got to be more creative in getting him off. Before they quit him.
Not really. You know, it seems like, you know, all they got to do is put 12 weirdo Florida people. Those people in Florida are weird.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember that jury that let off? What was that jury recently that basically admitted they just wanted to get him off? Like there was a recent one where the jury was, like, really egregious at letting off somebody who killed a black man. Like they just said, you know, I don't even remember the case. I mean, all these things are starting to blend together to me.
Well, I mean, just even if you go back to what's the little girl who everybody believes her mom murdered her?
Casey Anthony?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was it. You know, that whole trial, I don't know what the jury was thinking about on that one. Then you have you remember when Jordan Davis was killed by I can't remember the guy's name. Can't never remember the crook's name in these cases. But the initial jury was hung. They couldn't decide on convicting this guy on the murder charge. But the second jury got him. But the first jury, it was another dozen weirdos in the jury box that just, I don't know what they're doing in Florida in the water or whatever. But I have zero confidence that anything is a slam dunk in Florida.
Yeah.
Hold on. With this case right here.
I'm looking at it now, and it's like, it's heartbreaking. Wow.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking because of what happened, but also because you can tell, like, they're kind of showing their hand already that they don't really want to do this, convict this guy.
At least usually they come, well, we're going to do an investigation and blah, blah, blah. That blows some smoke up your ass. He just comes right out. Hey, man. I mean, you know, and
I think it's kind of one of the funny side effects of this, like, Black Lives Matter thing is that I think the same thing with filming people. Do you remember I think there was a lot of stuff happening, right, that scared racists a lot because it hadn't been tested. Like, there's been a lot of stuff just has been conventional wisdom that wasn't tested. So it was just registering as true. For example, the idea that you couldn't say the quiet parts out loud when it came to political racism, like you had to use dog whistles and all this stuff, and you had to apologize and beg and scrape for penance. And then Donald Trump just blew all that shit out the water. He said all the quiet parts out loud when it came to racism, and he just didn't use dog whistles and call people rapists. And you know, he semi-apologized for like one thing, like the pussy grabbing, but I mean, and he won. And also a lot of these racists who got doing racist tirades, and everyone was talking about their lives were ruined, like when you follow up on a lot of them, they all either got like transferred or got as good or better job later on down the road, or some people didn't get fired at all or whatever. Like these things blow over. So I think the same thing happening with Black Lives Matter and these protests and trials. Like a lot of people realize, you know what, this thing that we feared now has come to fruition, and we've seen the impotence of it. It's actually come to embolden us more.
That's because we just kind of, like you said, it's the impotence of it. We make a little bit of noise, you know. I don't know, they pretend to do something or they do a little bit of something, and then we're fine. We don't follow up. We don't say, hey, whatever happened to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the case of like an O.J. Simpson, they didn't just say, hey, you know, well, we lost the trial, you know, we tried. They hounded that man for a dozen years until they got him.
Yeah, exactly. And there wasn't, you just know, like
us.
It wasn't just protesting.
This whole society got on code and said, hey, we're gonna get this guy.
And we protest even when there are other options available, which is what's interesting. Like, for example, with the Ferguson thing, when a bunch of us tried to communicate or talk to activists down there, like Aki, a friend of the show who's actually been on the show before, and I tried to reach out to DeRay. This is when he was new. We didn't know anything about him. And we're like, hey, you know, we heard you're down there in the streets. We didn't realize that he was kind of selected by the powers that be to like diffuse and divert the energy into uselessness. We kind of took him at face value at first. So we were trying to like contact him and Netta to talk about, you know, there's this recall law on the books down there. All you need is 2,000 signatures. If you're out there protesting in the streets 24/7, you're surrounded by people all the time and you're in the neighborhood talking to the local activists. Why don't you? At the time, I didn't know who Darren Seals was. I found out about Darren Seals like way later.
Yeah.
And communicated with him later. If I knew about him back then, I would have contacted him instead alongside Aki. But I mean, but that's why the media works the way it does. That's what makes it good. They made this guy who was an outsider the face and gave the locals no cover. So even someone like me was not physically down there, but wanted to find a way to get involved. I look at the news. I see this DeRay guy. I'm thinking, okay, this must be the guy to contact, not realizing nobody really fucks with him like that down there. And he's... Yeah. He's basically a plant. But yeah, like we sent him the stuff about the recall election and all this stuff. And then he kind of like casually, gradually blew us off and ghosted us. And then I started listening to his weekly soapbox that he was doing down there. It was this thing that he would release every week that was like kind of like a podcast, but not really. It was like some kind of live workshops that he was doing down there around protesting, like giving a weekly update, him and Netta. And then when I listened, and this is when I was really new to a lot of this stuff. Like, a lot of my thoughts on this stuff was kind of formed post-Ferguson. Because I started seeing a lot of the activism and the bullshit in action. But
yeah,
that was when I first realized. I remember I wrote Aki. I'm like, have you been, like, listening to this DeRay guy stuff? For those who don't know, this is DeRay McKesson. I was like, have you been actually listening to, like, these weekly town halls that he's doing? And she was like, no, why? I'm like, well, I'm trying to listen to get a feel for him, you know, because we're trying to get him to help get these 2,000 signatures to remove the mayor of Ferguson, because we figured that's a real tangible thing that will scare people, you know, not just stamping your feet in the street,
pounding the street with your feet, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, there's a weird fixation with white people. The whole thing is about white allies. Like, the whole thing is about white allies knowing their role. Let black people lead. Don't take the mic. Don't make it about yourself. Don't talk over black voices. And it was just basically like just training white people to help build these black people's platform. Like, you're telling them how to support them without taking the attention and ensuring that they get maximum credit, that the black people get maximum credit. Like, that's all it was. And I was like, yeah, I was telling Ak, like, you gotta listen to this shit. And I listened to, like, some more, and I'm like, yeah, this whole thing is just about holding white people's hands and grooming white allies. As time went on, doing our investigating and observations, we kind of, all of us together, kind of figured out what the hustle was, like what we started coining the white ally industrial complex.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it just goes to your point of, as far as, you know, people aren't serious about creating consequences for, like you said, that was a real thing that could be done, you know, get that guy up out of there.
Obviously, from the beginning, that he had, you know, he was on the side of Darren Wilson and the lion-ass police chief and all that. So, you know, Ferguson being a majority black area, there was no reason why they couldn't get somebody in there that would be, you know, sensitive to what their needs were. But they, you know, people just couldn't be bothered, it seemed like. Outside of, because after DeRay left, there was still some on-the-ground efforts to get him recalled and whatnot. And he got reelected.
Yeah, but I think what happened, really, this is what I think really happened, is I think with the way the attention span and the way the energy is, you have moments to strike, you know, as far as like mobilizing people. And from the way people described it to me, a lot of people got kind of demoralized by how DeRay, Brittany Packnett, Netta, all these people kind of hijacked it, diverted the energy, and then all bounced when the cameras left to follow the cameras to the next protest. And they were just left with nothing. Like, I saw a lot of complaints about that. And this is what's interesting. It's kind of shows the difference between Twitter and Facebook, right? There was a certain level, it seems, a certain lack of sophistication. A lot of what was going on the ground, which is not really their fault. I think a lot of people were learning on the fly. Like, these were a lot of people who were not used to nationwide activism or grassroots, or not particularly media savvy, or particularly not very white people savvy, because that really helps. If you're a black person that knows how to make white people comfortable, how to talk to white people, how to talk to white people so they listen and not like be afraid, like, you know, I mean, and I put myself in that category. Like, I know, like, I'm a white people whisperer. I know how to talk to white people. It's something you can't take for granted. Like, not, there's a lot of black people who can't. Like, you know.
I don't know, though, T. That situation right there, I don't think you needed any white help at all.
Well, I think it didn't hurt white help as far as when the cameras come along and you want to get... I don't think you need it really for so much grassroots organizing. Because organizing is different than, like, activism. I think activism is about getting attention and, you know, getting a platform and making people aware. Whereas I think the organizing, and I might be wrong if I'm using these definitions wrong or naively, you know, please respectfully just let me know. But from my understanding, organizing is more, which I think is also harder too in a way, organizing, is actually putting your feet on the ground and mobilizing people, votes, money, resources, fundraising, like, you know.
But there wasn't, they had like, they had some people willing to put some money behind it. They had like a politician, a guy, a kind of a politically savvy, allegedly guy that was in Antonio French. Wasn't that his name?
Yeah, but that guy seemed to have gotten seduced by the slacktivists. Because he ended up, it seemed like he was casting his lot with them eventually. And he started even like disavowing some of the people who were talking about the recall. Like he seemed to end up allying himself with the Ray camp and stuff. Because I think he saw their star was rising. And he seemed to eventually hitch his wagon to them. Because Tariq Nasheed donated him some money and all this stuff. And he ended up getting kind of disillusioned with what the guy became. And I remember you and me and D in Twitter DMs were talking about what a disappointment he kind of turned out to be. Like, he seemed like he was like a writer in the beginning. And then he seemed to kind of want to cast his lot with the people getting a platform. And I mean, I don't want to slander the guy. I don't really know the full nuts and bolts.
What it appears to be.
He did seem to act kind of funny in the light, I think. But what I found interesting, what a lot of I saw those people say, right? And this is something, I don't want to sound classist or racist when I say this, but I do notice that there's a different type of person who's on Facebook versus Instagram versus Twitter. And I feel like Twitter is really the one for building platforms with strangers. But a lot of Black people or just regular people, there's a certain personality that likes Twitter, and it's not a broad-based platform. Like Facebook, Instagram is very low barrier of entry. It's very broad-based, whereas I think Twitter is very specific. I think there's a type of, your brain has to be warped in a certain way to enjoy Twitter. And, you know.
I guess I am
guilty,
too.
You know?
Although I find myself getting burnt out by it sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah, I find myself too. Like, I find myself now, like, I read less of it. I just post, and I even like post less now. But there was a time of 2012 or 2016, that was a great time for Twitter. But and that's when all this stuff was going on. But one thing that I know Darren Seals did was Darren Seals eventually became active on Twitter, like way after the fact. You know, he kind of wised up. But one thing he said that I thought was probably interesting, he had no idea the following that a lot of these people were building.
Yeah.
And he said a lot of people there didn't know because they were all on Facebook. And on Facebook, you end up talking to people you know all the time or people that follow you. Whereas Twitter is where you get the attention of strangers, you know? So he was... That famous thread that he did where he was calling all of them out and calling them activists, but spelled ACTOR, you know, VIST. He was calling them out. One thing he said, and he said a lot of locals, he was showing them about stuff and they totally didn't know either. Like he said, on Twitter, they've been like making like a big brand for themselves. And a lot of people had no idea how far they had gotten.
I remember that.
Of Twitter. And that's what I mean. Like, I think there's a certain lack of savviness that had, because first, like, they weren't on Twitter. And number two, even if they did get on Twitter, would they be able to get retweets from, like, you know, Wolf Blitzer?
Well, by that time, they were kind of behind. DeRay and Netta really had, you know, hogged up, you know, the real estate on Twitter as far as, like, making themselves the faces of that movement. And by the time, like you said, by the time, and I think that stoked a lot of Darren's anger, you know. It's like, what the hell? You know, he pops into Twitter and it's all of a sudden, it's a whole different narrative than...
It's a whole movie. So, it's a whole different narrative. And not just that, he's, at that time, they were on to, like, three or four new things. So he kind of realized how much further they took it. Like, they abandoned Ferguson and they're on like their fourth protest crashing. Yeah. Like, they're crashing the fourth protest. They're bigger than ever. They're getting invited to the White House and all this stuff. And one thing he said that was very interesting, that was that he was saying how they end up taking over all the energy, and how even a lot of local people kind of fell in line too. Not all of them, but like, you know, a lot of them like believed, oh, these outsiders are here to help us. And they know they have access to the media. They know how to talk to white people in a way that a lot of us don't really know how to talk to them and get taken seriously. Like, you know, their diction is good.
Educated.
They know how not to be get educated. They know how to rub shoulders with them. So I think a lot of them kind of just let them run with it a little bit. And then when they left, they got nothing for the community. So the community is like, wow, we actually got not only did we not get justice, we didn't even get any, like a lot of stuff that they got was stuff to help them. Like they got like this special oversight committee put into Ferguson, and the people that were on it were like people from that crew. So they basically got themselves jobs that they're able to use to springboard into bigger jobs that got, like, you know, Obama's attention, stuff like that, and stuff in his administration. But yeah, they got themselves jobs. They got themselves stuff to help Teach for America, because that's what Brittany Packnett and DeRay were doing before they went down there. So they got, like, they help Teach for America get a bigger foothold in that area and stuff like that. I mean, to tie it back to this case, like, I feel like all that stuff, that Black Lives Matter stuff that they're so proud of. And people come at me a lot on Twitter. They're like, you know, you criticize all this stuff, but we're on the front lines for you. I'm like, okay, what are your results? Yeah. Don't just say you're on the front lines. Like, why are you going to pat yourself on the back about being on the front lines if you didn't get results? If anything, not getting results makes you being on the front line bad, because that means that you took away attention and energy and resources from somebody that might have gotten results. Like, you know, that's like, hey, you know, It's like telling your client as a lawyer, hey, you know, I've been in court fighting for you every day for 5 cases. You know, I defended you for 5 cases. And I was your best advocate, but you know, you got the worst sentence in every case. You know, like I'm telling you this in jail. You're in jail, you know, with your fourth life sentence for a crime you didn't commit. You know, and I'm telling you, like, I fight for you. I do. You know, it's like
You're losing.
You should be like hiding your head.
Get the fuck out of here.
You shouldn't be bragging on that. Yeah. Like, there's no gold star for good intentions. You know. Especially if, if the intentions are even that good. I don't know. Yeah, but I think all that stuff has really emboldened a lot of these races. And you see it now. Like, you see it with this whole, like, Twitter do your thing culture, where, like, the person is holding up a camera at somebody doing a racist rant. And it's like, you know, Twitter do your thing. Find out where this person lives. Or the person is recording the racist, like, railing at them. And they're saying, really? Really? Wow. Wow. Really? Oh, it's like that? Wow. You know you're on camera, right? Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, yeah. Oh, so I'm a nigga? That's what we're doing today? A word? Wow. Wow. You know, and I remember, like, you know, people used to maybe, like, hide their face sometimes, or they would keep ranting, but, you know, they would, like, turn that camera off. Now, like, I saw some new ones, and now they're like, I don't care. Hi, keep filming. Like, they know it's a joke now. Like, we've seen multiple videos. There was that guy in the parking lot who was basically, like, basically calling the guy. Yeah, he goes, what are you going to do? Put this on Twitter? Like, you know, what are you going to do? And he started calling him names and stuff. The whole thing with the call-out culture, I think, has kind of proven itself to be impotent. And I notice now, even when you see those people pulling out the phones now and recording the people and trying to shame them, like, the people will lean into it. People will be like, yeah, you can record me. I don't give a fuck. Like, you know. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's no everlasting consequences, you know. There's no shame associated with it now, because I mean, it's just
Trump has really validated it. They're on the winning team now.
Yeah, this is the culture of the country right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a dangerous time.
In their minds, they're on the right side of history. In their minds, they're on the right side of history right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, but to bring it back to this case, I think that's kind of why we're seeing this kind of boldness now. Like, with all these acquittals and no firings and these DOJ investigations that I get flack for saying are overrated a lot of times.
Yeah.
But I get flack
for it. Oh, hell yeah. Oh, really?
True. Yeah, but people are like, oh, these things are great. These consent decrees are doing so much work. But they just end up transferring everybody. Like, even the few so-called firings they have, they always, those people, if you follow up, which I started doing, a lot of times you find out a year later they're working someplace else. Sometimes the people will work in a more affluent suburban area now and actually be a higher paid cop. Like, some of these people, it's like a temporary setback for them, you know? But either they don't get fired or they get a transfer disguised as a firing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why I think, like, these people are, like, so bold now. Like why we're seeing this cop just openly disdain, even pretending, like you said.
Yeah, because it came to light that the shooter
had a history of doing things like this. He confronted another black guy at that same gas station about that same handicap spot and threatened to shoot the guy and started harassing the guy. He found out where the guy worked and started harassing him at his job.
Yeah, it's so weird, man. White people have this weird thing about enforcing rules, but only on, or mainly on non-white people. That's the thing. Yeah. It's not like, I feel like I don't really see white people do this to each other to this degree of just constantly just coming over and acting like they're the boss of you or trying to give you orders. I think I told you about like my neighbor who tried to do that with me, like following behind me and watch how I threw out the trash. And I've lived there longer than she has and be throwing away the trash there and talk to the person who puts away the trash. But like she was walking behind me and I put down the garbage to open the door to the to the thing. Like I had the garbage in my hand. I have to walk to the door of where the garbage is stored. I have to put down the bag. And like the second I put down the bag, she didn't even wait till I was gonna do it. She goes, "You can't leave the bag there." And I'm like, "Bitch, I'm putting this bag down to open the door. Like, get the fuck out of here." Like, you know, I didn't say that at first, but I eventually did curse her out. Like the first time I said politely, I said, "I'm putting the bag down." I glared at her and I said very like harshly, I said, "I'm putting this down to open the door, not that you deserve an explanation. But don't just assume that I'm just gonna leave it here. Like just, you know, slow your roll." And then I'm like, "Okay, that's it." I'm like, she got the message. I go inside and I put garbage down and I hear, but I put it down again because now I have to lift the lid and I hear a second time. I hear, "You can't leave the garbage there either."
She follows like, you all the way in there, God, too,
this
huh?
Bitch, she's still there. Like I assume she left and was embarrassed. She was still there. I'm like, "Are you just staying here just to watch me? Like, are you this old white lady?" She had...
"Bitch, I'm going to throw you in the garbage."
Yeah, and then that's when I ended up losing it. And then my wife started explaining herself to the lady. And I told my wife, like, "Why are you explaining yourself to this person?" Like, you know, she was angrily explaining herself. Like she wasn't explaining herself like she was bowing down to the person. But she was angrily explaining herself. Like, "Oh, we've been putting it away for years. We talked to the person about where to put it away. We put it in the can." You know, I'm like, "Listen, you're doing too much. Don't even explain." I said it in front of the lady. I'm like, "Don't explain to this bitch. Do not, like, you're feeding into her delusions of grandeur, even by explaining. Like, fuck her. Who is she?" And I said this, like, right in front of her. Like, I pointed at her, but acted like she wasn't there because they hate that. They hate when you treat them like them. Like, so, like, I wasn't insulting her, but I wasn't even addressing it to her. I was, because they do that to us all the time. Like, talk about us, like, where, and so I'm talking about her and calling her names, but not doing it to her. I'm doing it in front of her to my wife while she's standing there. I'm like, this bitch is nobody. This bitch is someone delusions of grandeur, you know.
It's the fucking garbage police. Fuck this raggedy bitch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, and then she's like, got this look on her face like, "Oh my God, like I can't believe." And I wanted to make her feel like she was very unimportant. Like we talk about her, like, you know, in abstraction and whatever. And then we walked on, but I started thinking like, wow, that audacity, like, you know, but they love to do that. They naturally feel comfortable being in charge of non-white people. It's like,
you know,
it's getting
worse. You're seeing all these, I mean, they've, like you said, they've always felt that way, where they felt like they needed to police our, you know, our conduct out in public. You know, they feel like they're in charge of us,
but they think it's their God-given duty. Like, they think it's their birthright. That's the weird thing. They think they're all, when they're born white, they're like, their birth certificate that says white under race, the space that says white under race works as a deputizing. Like, once a classifier is white, they've been officially deputized to have sway over black people. Like, they're the manager of black people or non-white people in general.
And, you know, we make fun of these permit patties and you know, these people we've been talking about lately on the videos.
Yeah.
But this is the culmination of that. You got this guy over here in the parking lot picking a fight with somebody over a parking space that I don't even think he is entitled to the parking space either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As far as that goes. But also, obviously, he didn't need it.
But also, I wonder if a white person went into that space that looked like someone that he would be friends with. I wonder if he'd do the same thing. Or if he just assumes when a black person goes in. You know, kind of like how this lady probably assumed, "Oh, wait, there's people of color throwing that garbage. They're probably going to do it wrong. You know, I got to make sure."
This guy was just that. He was just waiting. He's picking. He's got a history of picking fights with people.
Oh, and this woman, if I came at her too strong, she would have definitely done a permit patty on me. She would have called the cops and been like, you know, "This black man is bothering me." And I think he has rapey eyes, too. Like, you know, she's like 60 something, but I'm sure she was. I'd be there with my wife, you know, and she's probably throwing that, you know, I think he might be about to rape me. And she had this look. That she had this total NPR tote bag carrying type of look. Like, you know, listen to Terry Gross, Fresh Air. And, like, you can tell she thinks she's probably like a real progressive or liberal. She just totally had that stereotypical look. She had the, you know, I voted for Hillary Sandals. She just had, like, that total, like, fucking look. Yeah. She's some progressive gentrifier, old, but she's retired and her kids are grown, and now she wants to like close out her last couple of decades in Brooklyn, like, you know, slumming in the city or something. Who knows? But it was, I never see that lady again too. That's the worst part. She probably moved to a more expensive building to go gentrify somebody else out. Who knows? Any final thoughts? I think I'm done. I've already worked myself up just talking about that lady.
like you said, there, we need to really get on top of things like this and follow through. I don't really know what it's going to take for black folks to see, you know, the situation we're in. Like, what the, listening to the sheriff give his reasoning, you know, you could just tell where he was at with it. And, you know, we have no friends in law enforcement, and you see, it's gonna go the same way that the whole Zimmerman thing went. And you got people allowing.
Yeah, and Zimmerman,
I have brothers, man. Yeah. I got brothers. I got nieces, nephews. And
I was supposed to say, real I'm quick, not letting that. Zimmerman is another deputized guy. That's another.
Yeah.
Did we mention that already? But yeah, he falls.
Yeah, in that category. It falls in that category. You know, and it started, and I think the fact that guy is still walking around lets these people. It sends a bad message to people that we're gonna keep tolerating that shit. And
and that's why I think it's bigger than the cops. Like, it's bigger than police brutality, because now you got these self-proclaimed, like, you know, armchair cops.
Yeah, and
self-deputized.
It's not really self-deputized when the law allows them to get away with it. It's just like a wink and a nod. Yeah,
they're like implicitly deputized.
Yeah.
You're right. They're not self-deputized. They actually are kind of deputized. And if it's not deputized at the time, they're retroactively deputized.
Like, exactly.
After they kill. Like.
Oh, what? Oh, yeah. No, you're covered. You're covered.
Yeah. You took one for the team. We got you. Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. I would like to keep track of this. I'm going to set a Google alert for it, because I know a big problem that happens, and I'm guilty of this too, is you move on to the next travesty
that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so I'm going to set a Google alert for this Clearwater, Florida case, and hopefully we can follow up on it and see what happened. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. And
we'll talk. Oh, I'm going. Let me tell people, work after this.
yeah. This is important. I am having an operation on Friday, fixed my torn rotator cuff. I'm finally taking care of that. And I think I mentioned this on air, but I have two torn rotator cuffs from doing Olympic lifting like crazy. But even before that, they told me that I probably had these for a while, and I've been exercising for years with torn rotator cuffs, because they told me I had a high pain threshold, and they said that doing the Olympic lifting so hard was probably like the final straw. But so I'm doing this first operation. I have no idea what it's going to be like, what the recovery is going to be like. I'm hoping it won't put a big gap in recording or anything, but yeah, we'll see what happens. It's Friday, so I don't know what'll happen for next episode. But to put you on the spot, and fans, you know, at Black Exception One and at MD Mills 79 on Twitter, those are the ads. If you want to pressure these guys to do a show without me, or two shows without me, you know, because then I've, as a fan, I've been clamoring for this. I want to enjoy a show where I'm just a listener and I can hear you and D chop it up. So,
Man, we almost did it a couple times. Just didn't work out, you know.
Yeah, put the pressure on these guys, man, because I want to listen to it too, man.
We definitely want to keep it rolling while hopefully T won't need, you know, some time off, but we definitely want to keep you guys fed.
Yeah.
In the streets.
I mean, I'm gonna be on either Vicodin or Percocet, so maybe I should record. It'll be interesting.
Hell yeah.
I could just be slurring my words. I'll say all types of crazy shit, and then after I'm sober again, the comments will be all off the wall. The curious cat will have more hate than ever. Based on my Percocet comments. We'll see. But let's see what happens. But I'm just throwing that out there now that next week might be a little funny, but we'll do our best to get shows out. All right, man. Be good.
All right, brother.
All right, man. Take care.